Looks like it's 9 o'clock, and the meeting will come to order. And before we start, we've had a request, and I think it's a very good request, to have a few moments of silence for the deputy sheriff that was so tragically killed yesterday afternoon. Thank you very much. We're going to change the order around a little bit. We'll go ahead and have the report. Let's see if I get my agenda here. From Mr. Dossie for the normal things, but he also has an epistle. And we will hold the epistle. We'll hold the epistle until later. So yes, please do go ahead.
So I'm going to wait. I have, as I committed to you, I think the last couple times that you all met, I do want to do kind of a year-end summary, which is what I've printed out for you, and I'll do it on the overhead as well. I think what a lot of people lose sight of is how much our department is actually involved in. So I think it'd be good for you all to see all those various things that we do that maybe are efforts outside of the confines of this hearing room. So I'll do that, and I'll do my normal report. I will note that you have basically two consent items today. You have the minutes from January 16th, and then you also have a final plat for Pioneer Landing at Lorison Ranch, filing number 3. So if there's any questions on either of those, we'd be happy to answer those.
Hearing no questions, thank you, Craig.
Thank you, Chair.
The voting members will be Mr. Curry, Mr. Greeley, Mr. Joya, Mr. Wood, Ms. Dillon, Ms. Friedman, and Ms. Therese. That gives us 8. I normally like to do an odd number, but there's no real reason for anybody to stand on the side today. And so with that, has everybody had a chance to read the minutes? Any changes? Hearing none, the minutes are approved as presented. And with that, we'll go to our first item of business, which is SF-17-022. And Ms. Parsons, are you?
Are you requesting Carrie Parsons, Planning and Community Development. Good morning. Are you requesting this item be pulled from the consent then and be heard as a regular item?
No, I guess I'm really not. I'm just a little bit confused.
Okay. Well, let me see if I can.
Meeting goes on. Hopefully, we can fix my confusion. Is anyone in the audience want to pull this first item off the consent calendar? Does anybody on the commission want to pull it off of the consent calendar? Hearing none, I guess we'll leave it on the consent calendar, and thank you very much.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
For reminding me it was on the consent.
Well, you never know.
I know. Never do know.
Mr. Chair, is your mic on?
Beg your pardon?
Is your mic on?
It is on. Okay. Can you hear me?
No. I'm having trouble hearing you.
Does this help?
Probably closer helps.
It should be on.
There it is.
So, do I have a motion? Mr. Joya.
Mr. Chair, in regards consent item number 2C, SF-17-00 or 022, the Pioneer Landing at Lorison Ranch filing number 3, final plat. I move for approval under the new resolution, page 19, with 8 conditions, 2 notations, and a finding of sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability.
Second.
And a second from Ms. Therese. And we'll go through the call. Mr. Curry.
Aye.
Mr. Gioia.
Aye.
Mr. Creeley.
Aye.
Mr. Wood.
Aye.
Ms. Therese.
Aye.
Ms. Dillon.
Aye.
Ms. Friedman.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So the item is approved. And we will move to the second item, which is the variance of use for Mountain Splendor Services.
Planning Commission, Mr. Chair, good morning. Dave Savigny, Planning and Community Development. This is a variance of use for Mountain Splendor Services. The project number is VA-17-10. And myself is the planning manager and Gilbert LaForce is the engineer for the project. Here's the review criteria. I'm going to turn it over to the county attorney to go over that.
Cole M, Senior Assistant County Attorney. The criteria for the variance of use, you have the ability to base a decision on any of the criteria because, as the lead-in states from Section 5.3.4, the following criteria may be considered. And among these are that the strict application of the code would result in peculiar and exceptional practical difficulties or undue hardship. The proposed use is compatible with the surrounding area or harmonious with the character of the neighborhood. The use will be able to meet air, water, odor, noise standards established by federal, state, and county regulations. The use will comply with all applicable requirements of the Land Development Code as well as applicable state and federal regulations. The use will not adversely affect wildlife or wetlands. Applicant has addressed all off-site impacts. The site plan for the proposed variance will provide adequate parking, traffic circulation, open space, fencing, screening, and landscaping, and or the sewer, water, stormwater drainage, fire protection, police protection, and roads will be available and adequate to serve the needs of the proposed variance.
I just want to introduce, the owner is here, Mr. Dan Combs, and their representatives are NES, Ms. Tamara Baxter and Andrea Barlow. So I'll turn it over to them for their presentation.
Good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me would be the first question. Yes.
We can hear you. Have you had a chance to sign in?
I haven't. I will do that.
If you would do that and state your name into the microphone there for the record.
I'm Andrea Barlow with NES. And we have a brief presentation for you on this project. So just a little background. This is a small landscape business operated by Dan Combs. It's called Mountain Splendor Services, and it's been operating locally in the area since 2009 and provides landscape services for the surrounding area, and it relocated onto the subject property in October 2015. We're requesting a variance for a contractor's equipment yard because that is the definition. This is a landscape contractor, so that's the definition in the code within which this falls. We understand that the request, though, the requirement for the variance was generated by an objection from one of the neighbors, and that would be the neighbor in this corner here. Just a little history, as indicated, they relocated to the site in 2015. The owner purchased the property from his brother, who had owned and operated a wholesale tree nursery on the site for over 15 years. So when Mr. Combs decided he would be moving, needed to move his operation, his brother at the same time was wanting to leave the business that he'd been operating on this property, so it seemed a good match up from a nursery to a landscape business. There's been no residential use of this site since 2002, so it has been in this kind of commercial, industrial, landscaping type use for quite some time. The Quail Brush subdivision, which is the residential you'll see to the south, was annexed into the city in 2007. A little bit of a history on that. The actual phase two plans for Quail Brush, which is the area immediately adjacent to this site to the south, were approved in 2015, in February 2015. So it's quite a recent residential use in this area. The PUD development plan that was submitted to the city for this use, as you may see just here, identified the adjacent El Paso County zoning as A5 and the use as residential slash light industrial. So at that time, when this project came forward in the city, the uses on this property were identified as light industrial, which I think is probably a bit of a over-exaggeration of the uses that are on the site. It is a contractor's business, and there's a lot of landscaping equipment there. So we'll come on to what's actually on the site in a second. There's a 30-foot utility easement from here to here. So the back of the lots to the edge of Mr. Cohn's property, there is a 30-foot utility easement. That is actually utilized as a trail at the moment, which connects into the trail system for the Quail Brush subdivision. And just so you know, that the homes here that immediately are adjacent to the southern boundary were purchased between roughly November 2016 and June 2017. So the site location, just to give a broader context, so these pale yellow areas are the county properties. It's kind of a fairly large county enclave within the city, which is in the gray, and this area here is the Quail Brush subdivision. The access is via Main Lane to the property, via Main Lane, and that is about 0.3 of a mile from Woodman. You have to access via Black Forest Road on Adventure Way, which is the frontage road. So this is Main Lane is a private unpaved roadway which the owner actually maintains. Mr. Combs maintains at his own cost. He keeps it in good shape, and he will plow it. And I think most of the neighbors on Main Lane are very appreciative of his efforts in that regard. So just some of the adjacent uses and land use zoning. So we have county property to the north and east, zoned agriculture and residential. And then to the west is also zoned agricultural in the city. And obviously the Quail Brush to the south is zoned PUD residential. These uses, this is a company called Green Thumb. And they have they do a pumpkin patch and that sort of thing. So they're kind of a agricultural landscape, not so much landscaping, but an agricultural use, but more of a kind of active agricultural use. And to the north is called HydroTurf, and they are also a landscaping contractor's business, and there are other similar uses along Main Lane. So the existing improvements that are on the property, this is the main office structure, which was originally built as a residence, and that was built in 1972. It is now an office building for the business. This building here is an equipment storage shed that was effectively a pole barn that was built in 2000. We have a couple of greenhouses in this area, and a trailer and storage container, and that stores irrigation material. And they were installed with this new use in 2015. other structures on the site. We've got some landscape storage bins to the south here. They're about not very high. They're made with cinder block, or about 2-3 feet high, just kind of little storage areas. There are a couple of water tanks on the site. You may see them in some subsequent photographs, but they're actually going to be removed in June of this year, so they are not going to remain on the site. This is a seasonal operation. I think this is important. During the peak season, which is April, May time, October, November, depending on the weather. This year, it could be all year, I suppose, because the weather's been so good. But it is in actually, so this photograph here was taken at this weekend, which shows that there's more storage of vehicles on the property in the winter months, and then during the summer months, during the hours of operation of approximately 7 a.m. to 5:30, they will have crews that will come in and load up the stuff they need for their landscaping job. But most of the employees will have a truck and will meet on site, so they're not coming to and from the site. Just they will be loading up in the morning, and then the vehicles. The seasonal employees will take the vehicles and then take them home, and it will be their vehicle for that period of time during the season. Off season, the operational hours are much narrower, and there's only a few employees on the site, and the vehicles are parked on the site during the winter months.
Before you take this slide off.
Yes.
The two photographs you're showing here.
Yes.
Where is that taken from? Is this the view that the residential?
No, this is taken from. If I can maybe go back. How do I go back? Let's try. There. So this was taken approximately from here, from the road, looking across, in this direction.
Okay. Thank you.
And then this is just a bit of information about the equipment on the site. So there is the typical landscaping equipment stored on the site, bobcats and some other trailers and trucks and the vehicles as well. Landscape standards, we're just showing here the back of the Quail Brush residential. They have a 6-foot privacy fence here, as well as the 30-foot tract, which is a utilities tract. This was taken in September last year. You can probably see the one taken more recently this last weekend. This trail has been formalized. It is now a formal gravel trail, as opposed to this was there had been no improvement of it at all as of September last year, but now it has been improved. The buffering requirements for the Quail Brush subdivision, that was actually looked at when, just to give a little bit more history on Quail Brush, that was actually subject to an appeal by the county residents to the city at the time that was being proposed. And as part of their plans, they proposed buffering. And at the time, the proposed 6-foot fence and the 30-foot utility easement were considered sufficient buffering to the county property, which, as I indicated before, was acknowledged as being in a non-residential use. So with this project, we are proposing a different additional landscaping. So the pale green trees are existing, and the kind of turquoisey green trees are additional Austrian pines that we're proposing to plant in addition to provide additional screening. It's interesting that the landscape plan that was approved for the city project did actually show landscaping in this tract, but clearly, as it is a utilities tract, you can't actually plant trees in there. So there was no landscape provision with that development. So our client has agreed to install additional trees to provide some additional screening. In our first round of comments back from the county, it was suggested that we include a fence, which we showed on our resubmitted plan, and I noticed it was a condition of approval in the recommendations from staff. Our client is willing to provide that 6-foot fence, but our opinion is that that addition of a 6-foot fence in that location, together with the existing 6-foot fence at the back of the Quail Brush subdivision, is not going to create a particularly pleasant or safe environment along that trail corridor. So while our client has indicated, well, if that's what I need to stay in business, I'll do it, but our opinion as planners and landscape architects is that that is not a good solution, that the better solution is to provide the additional landscaping that we're showing, which accounts for the provides for the fact that the Quail Brush subdivision didn't provide any landscaping as part of their buffer requirements. Just to go back to that, the existing uses on the site at the time were fairly similar to the operation now. So it was a tree planting business, and the buffering requirements should have been a requirement of the Quail Brush subdivision rather than a future imposition on the county property, which really the operation hasn't changed that significantly. And that was kind of why I put the dates in of when the properties were purchased along there. They bought those properties knowing what this operation was. They possibly bought during the downtime, the down season, but they came to the nuisance because it's their claim that this is a nuisance and it's upsetting their amenity, their ability to enjoy their property. But they certainly purchased well after this operation was in place, even with the change from the tree nursery to the more intense, and we recognize it's a more intense landscape contractor's use, that's why we're here applying for this variance. But they moved to the nuisance, and I would say that also we have had one letter of objection on this project from the person who lives in this corner property. The neighbours to the north, east and west have both written in letters of support, and we've had one letter of support, I think it was from this 226 here, one letter of support from a neighbour to the south as well. So it's really only this property that has raised any concern. That's why we've kind of concentrated some of our landscaping proposed there to help ease that relationship. But we feel that this business is being imposed upon by the new residents from the city coming in adjacent to the county property and potentially forcing them out of business if this variance isn't approved. So on that note, I will answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Mr. Joy.
I have to say I tend to agree with you on the 6-foot fence. It would create what looks like a dangerous walking corridor there, you know, to screen it from anybody witnessing what happens in there. If it does end up being a condition of approval still, if we don't remove it, though, you said your client is willing to put it up if necessary?
Yes. Okay. I mean, if it's a necessary requirement for him to stay in business and get the variance approved, then okay. Yes, of course he'll do it. He's a landscape contractor. Right. It's obviously going to be at a fairly significant expense, even
sure,
though
sure.
It is his own, that's his nature of his business.
Sure.
But we just feel from an aesthetics and safety point of view that it's really going to create, I'm trying to pull up the photograph of the, so it's going to create a fairly ominous corridor
there. My real question then comes in. It looks like on your schematic there that you were looking at planting 9 trees.
Yes.
Would that be enough to fully cover that southern border there?
Well, it's not going to fully cover it. I mean, like on this
diagram
here.
Will those big gaps there actually still be there?
So these are existing.
Right.
And these are proposed, so we strategically placed them in areas where we felt additional screening was needed.
Okay.
I mean, I think if I would have to confer with my client, but I think if the choice was to construct a fence or add a few more trees, I would imagine the preference would be to add a few more trees. But I can, yes, I'm getting a nod on that one. So if that would be the compromise, then I think we would look at doing that in preference to putting up the fence.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gabe Savigdon, Planning and Community Development. I will finish up. Again, this is VA 17-10. It's a request for approval of variance of use to legalize an existing contractor's equipment yard. Property address is 7205 Main Lane. It is zoned A5, 5 acres. This is the vicinity map, so you kind of get a little bit more of an idea. I don't know if you guys had a chance to get out there. It's close to Mark Shuffle and the Woodman intersection right there. The notification was mailed out to 15. I did get returned. I got 3 in favor, 1 against. The 1 against was concerned about noise issues, visual components, and they had issues concerning for the wetlands there to the east. So a contractor's equipment yard, as she had defined, it's a service establishment primarily engaged in general contracting or subcontracting in the construction, repair, maintenance, or landscape trades. It may include administrative offices, workshops, and indoor or outdoor storage of tools, equipment, materials, and vehicles used by the establishment. So you will notice in the staff report that was prepared for you guys that the other option is the home occupation. Unfortunately, somebody has to the owner has to reside on property, just to clear that up. That's why this wouldn't qualify for that. It's got to qualify for the contractor's equipment yard.
One question. Before the property was purchased and it was used as a nursery?
Yes.
Was that home occupied?
I don't have any information as far as that, but the tree farm isn't allowed use in the A5 zoning district. So I do have some background on it, but we don't have any applications for this property, so it's hard to tell when somebody was there when they moved out, because I don't even know when the house was built. We're just going off of the assessor's timelines and the applicant's timelines.
So the tree nursery isn't allowed use, but it would need to be a special use?
A tree farm by right isn't allowed use in the A5 zoning district. There is the site development plan that they may or may not have to, depending on the size for what they're doing, but it isn't allowed use in that zoning district.
So prior to the sale, that property was zoned and operated in a manner that was consistent with the zoning. Is that correct?
Yes, and I do have some aerials that will kind of show some of what that was whenever I do the background, the history of it, what the applicant said about the tree farm, as what I was able to find in my research was true, that it was a tree farm, which isn't allowed use, that we wouldn't have done anything unless there was a complaint driven anyway.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
so,
Mr.
I'm sorry, just on something you just mentioned a second ago, you talked about getting 4 responses back. Can you go back to your previous where you had the notifications? I don't have in my packet the ones that were in support. Did they have any comments that went along with it, or did they just check the yes column?
Yeah, they said that he was a good neighbor, that one of the issues was that he took care of the road. I was going to address that as far as the evidence that what the applicant proposed, that he does maintain the road, was backed up by the notification to the neighbors. Everybody said the ones that are in favor have said that he maintains it in a proper way and that they've never had any issues with
it. And where did the ones in favor come from on that map?
So there is the property to the west, this one right here, to the north and to the east. I didn't see this one from that one. It may have came in, but I didn't get it. And as of yesterday, whenever I prepared this presentation for you.
Okay, so none of the ones that you had in the packet came from the residence there, but they did come from the surrounding
Just the one
businesses.
That I have that would be against is this residence here.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Yes, Ms. Friedman.
Yeah, I have a question in the write-up. It said, the city of Colorado Springs had these concerns, identified the concern that the newly platted and developing residential property to the south will be impacted by noise and setbacks. Are they talking about the one that's already developed or some other one?
So they're speaking of the subdivision to the south as far as the and I don't know the history within the city for that development. But whenever they administered their comments to us, it was they were concerned about the subdivision to the south and the development hazards to that one.
And it says that the prospect of having a small unincorporated enclave could be challenging in terms of efficient provision of services. I just don't understand that, because it's unincorporated either way, isn't it?
Right. So the intent for the city and obviously for the county is whenever those developments come in for the services is to try to go into the incorporate themselves into the city.
Okay.
And so right now there is an enclave over there because this property. This is the zoning map. So anything that doesn't have the box is actually right now within the city. So as you can tell that this whole area right now is considered what they would have the enclave on it. But it's at the opportunity for the property owners to try to annex in to the city and then to work out those conditions within the city. The county at that time, we would just prepare the staff report for the BOCC for them to be able to annex. It's just an annexation impact report. But we don't really have any, the county staff wouldn't have any say-so necessarily except for our outside agency review.
So they're when they're talking about a small enclave, they mean all the yellow and green on the map.
They're just meaning, because they're completely surrounded. So they're they're completely surrounded
Thank
by
you.
City right now,
Thank you.
And so they're maintaining on that.
The question of annexation, isn't that one that is determined by the property owners as to whether they wish to be annexed into the city or
yes.
not? So that would be something that would be initiated by the property owners, our yellow property owners, if you will.
Correct.
And the city is saying if they want to be annexed, then it might be harder.
Based on the comments that I have, without them annexing, then it could mean that it's going to be difficult for the city services to keep expanding through that area. Based on the intent on their comment, I could not tell you if they were requesting for them to try to annex or not. That was their comments were that because it's an enclave, that city services will be hard to expand in that area.
Well, it seems like the city gets to choose what they're going to annex, and if it's going to be hard for them to put services in, they may want to address that at the time of annexation. So. Unless the city is giving us some evidence that we can examine, it sounds like they're just whining. But that's probably not an appropriate statement to make. Thank you.
Any other questions or for that?
Nope.
So as you can see, this is the zoning. So out in that district, a lot of it is R5, which is rural residential, 5-acre minimum. And then this parcel in particular is still A5, agricultural, with 5 acres. So the house, by the evidence and research that I was able to do, the house was built in 1972. There was a pole barn that was put in there in 2000. And by the aerials that I'll provide here in a minute, there was a greenhouse in 2002. But again, based on my research, I was unable to find any permits through El Paso County Planning Community Development or the Pikes Peak Regional Building Department for any of the structures. And then as per aerials, there was a second greenhouse that was added between 2014 and 2016. The property had an existing tree farm, which is an allowed use in the A5 Agricultural Zoning District. The owner purchased the property in 2015 and since moved a semi-trailer, storage container, landscape storage bins, 2 water tanks under the site as depicted in the aerials. And then the complaint was submitted on March 24th, 2017, that the office had been converted into a residence and the county is 100% complaint basis. So without any complaint prior to that, we wouldn't have gone out there to do any investigation. And the early assistance meeting was held on June 26th. The submission request for the application was sent on that same date. And then we received the application in October 24th, which is typical to get all these documents because there's quite a bit of stuff to try to get in on that time. So this is the aerial maps in 2007. As you can tell, this back here is what is considered the tree farm, which is an allowed use in that area. And this would be the greenhouse right here. And they did expand some of that tree farm, but again, it's an allowed use. And then that still had that one there. There is some more equipment that comes as far as on-site. And then the use, this could be in a typical area on the down season after they've harvested some of the trees. And then again, one of the greenhouse. 2014, You'll see from this one to the next one, there will be an increase in intensity. Still that greenhouse. And then 2016 is when, which does meet with the applicant's application of what he said whenever they brought everything out, that here's the storage bins for their mulch and everything. And then here's the additional greenhouse. And then the tree farm is still there. So we did do a site visit. This is Mountain Splendor Services from the road. And then this is close to adjacent, which you saw some similar pictures just a minute ago. The residential area is this right here. There is a wide walking trail right through there. And then this is the property. So the intensity of the use, as you can see from some of the pictures, it does increase in the off season. There is some outdoor storage. They do have some areas depicted on their site development plan for outdoor storage. And so that's but part of the condition is they still have to get their site development plan approved. And then this is some of the some more outdoor storage, though, towards the property line, towards the eastern or southern and eastern side. And these are some adjacent properties. So as far as the properties to the north, east, and west, that the uses seem to be in the compatible in nature. So you have, like they discussed, that this right here is another landscape business. These are some of the images driving down the road. They do have a privacy fence that does go all the way around. But as you get down further down the road, then you can look back and you can still see their greenhouse. So some of the uses are similar. This is Mount Splendor that's across the street to the west. This is their actual main building. And this right here is a 100% opaque fence from that private road for any outdoor storage behind it.
What do you want me to talk about?
So for drainage, it's located in the Sand Creek drainage basin. The drainage report identified that the existing improvements have no anticipated water quality impact. Transportation, main lane is the primary access to and from the site and is a private unpaved road extended from Adventure Way. The applicant stated, and one neighbor did confirm, as we mentioned earlier, that main lane is primarily maintained by Mountain Splendor Services year-round, and a traffic study was not required, and the road impact fee is not required since the variance is not expected to result in an increase in 100 vehicle trips per day. So some of the information, the policy analysis that we did, 6.2.1, fully consider potential impact of proposed zone changes and development on the integrity of existing neighborhoods. Utilize buffer zones to provide mutually compatible transitions between neighborhoods and adjoining development with differing uses or densities. And ensure that proposed zone changes and or use variances in established neighborhoods are of compatible scale and physical character. Is there a site development plan? You did see that again. So some of the outdoor storage area are regulated to within these areas. One of the conditions, obviously, to any variance of use is that the site development plan, they can't enlarge or change it without having to go through any kind of variance process or they're in a zoning violation. So if this variance is approved and this site development plan does keep everything to right there, outdoor storage would have to be contained into these areas, and so on and so forth, parking within this area, unless they alter that, but then they would have to go back through the process to be able to alter it. So conditions: within 60 days from the date of approval, the applicant shall submit a site development plan for review and approval by the Planning and Community Development Department. Within 60 days from the date of approval, the applicant shall submit all necessary applications for building permitting for which the structure is located on the property. Within 60 days from the date of approval, the applicant must erect a 6-foot, 100% opaque fence. No vehicular traffic and or parking or storage of construction equipment, materials, or supplies shall occur over the existing on-site wastewater. And any contractor-related mechanical equipment that is maintained on-site must have fluids collected and stored to either be recycled or disposed of per all state and federal regulations. So to make a note, I know that the fence was discussed. The reason why that was there is because per code, that any different use as that, they do have a 100% opaque requirement. The suggested landscape plan may in time do that, but the trees, as we know, could take 20 to 30 years for any 100% opaque type requirement on that. Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Joya.
Was there any consideration of the fact that a 6-foot opaque fence already exists along the southern border there? Was that taken into account even while doing this condition?
So that was, but the way that the code does regulate is that it's on the property line. So that property line for where the residential fence is for the residential neighborhood. Their property line is right there, and I'm not able to change the code for anybody. That's where those are in there. If you guys wish to omit that and to leave that, then that would be based on the Planning Commission and then the BOC, the Board of County Commissioners. But I can't change it for it. And so that's because of the requirements, it has to be on their property line to be able to have it installed.
If we removed the condition, though, on our end and the Board of County Commissioners agreed with us, then it would be okay, even though it would basically be another variance of code at that
correct,
point.
Correct, because the applicant and the representative did follow the correct procedure on that and requesting the modification for that within their letter of intent to request the alternate landscaping with the fence.
All right, thank you.
Question I have, you are not requesting a 6-foot opaque fence on the western boundary, and that western boundary is within property that's annexed into the city.
I apologize, can you repeat that?
Just west of the property, isn't that city?
To the west of it is the city, that's along that private road right there.
Yeah, that's in the city of Colorado Springs,
yes,
right?
Sir. Yes, sir.
But you're not requesting a 6-foot fence there.
Correct. The fence that we're requesting on this southern boundary, because the uses are compatible whenever it comes to anything to the west, north, and east of this property, based on the information and the from the feedback from those adjacent neighbors and from the aerials and doing research, that those are compatible uses. So as far as the code is concerned, they're similar in nature. The only way that the code does require that privacy fence is whenever you're trying to create that buffer between two incompatible uses.
Okay. Do we know at what point the city zoned the area to the south to be residential?
That, as far as the city's, no, I don't have that information. Okay. Whenever that area was zoned residential.
Because the city could do something on the west also.
Right now, that with that property, just like any VAR within the county, they would be, because that is city, if they ever came through that subdivision, they would have to go through that subdivision process. But yeah, they'd try to subdivide that at that time. But if this one had the approval through the county that it's becomes a legal use, then whenever, if those neighbors complain at that time, then we would be able to go to this record and say they went through the steps and they have a legal variance of use for that parcel. Right now, whenever the complaint came in, when the research came in, all we could do is go through our records, and there is none for the parcel. So that's what triggered all of this process. In the future, if there is a complaint, then anybody would be able to pull this up on our new eDARPS program to be able to show that they went through all the steps, they have the variance of use, if approved, and the site development plan. And then we would go out to make sure they're still in accordance with that site development plan. And if they are, there is no zoning violation. They would be in the allowed use on it.
So the reason we're really here today is because the property owners had not recognized and went for a variance of use prior to this time for that.
I can't speak for what the previous part. All I can do is, again, is just say that there was a complaint driven, and that complaint did the investigation. There were no permits or variance of use for this parcel. For code, they have to go through that application process. And if approved, then by you or recommended for approval by your board, and then the Board of County Commissioners does approve, then any complaints in the future that come in on it, then we would be able to refer them to that variance of use approval.
Thank you. You've answered my question. Any other questions? Yes, Ms. Freeman.
Yeah, I just have a quick question. Did anyone talk to the people that actually use that trail and say, would you like a 6-foot fence or not? Because it's kind of commonsensical that's unsafe, but I just wondered if the people that use the trail had any opinions about that.
So the specific comments to that were that they did want the privacy fence, because if they're walking down through there, then they wouldn't have to see the outdoor equipment or the outdoor storage. That space right there is 30 foot apart, so the height of the fences, it's not a 15 foot corridor with 6 foot privacy fences that would make it a extremely unsafe area. It is a 30 foot with two-story houses on that south side, that with that kind of information, it's not going to impose too much of a safety issue because of the distance between them.
All right, thank you. Any other questions?
I have a couple, but I was going to let him. Did you want to wait till he finishes, or?
I'm almost finished.
Okay. I mean, it's.
You can ask your question whenever you choose to.
I'll wait till he finishes.
All right.
Thank you.
The last two conditions, those are brought on by the health department to make sure that obviously that any runoff or anything doesn't affect any of the ground soil. So that's why the contractor let a mechanical equipment maintain on site, that those fluids be collected. The notations, variance of use approval includes conditions of approval and accompanying site plan and elevation drawings. Again, this is the typical notation. No substantial expansion, enlargement, intensification, or modification shall be allowed except upon reevaluation and public hearing as specified in the El Paso County Land Development Code. And the Board of County Commissioners may consider revocation and or suspension if zoning regulations and or variance of use conditions standards are being violated. And if the variance of use is discontinued or abandoned for 2 years or longer, the variance shall be deemed abandoned. So, that is my presentation.
Did you want to make some questions now?
Yes, thank you. You remind me when the city's residential area down to the south got approved? Or, I mean, when did that come into existence?
So I don't have that on this presentation for it. I know that the applicants, they put it in together that it went in 2007. The notification that I got from the city didn't respond to that. Just they wanted to make sure that the neighbors were included. And so we did make sure that those neighbors to the south right there were included on the notification process.
Right.
To allow a little further extent to it.
I'm just doing this because of timing, because when they came in, they knew or should have known there was a tree farm there, which was a compatible use. 2015 use, which was not an allowed use, came into effect after the houses were there. So that's what I'm trying to get, is that time. I mean, after the zoning or the point is that there wasn't an approved contractor's equipment yard there when those houses were put in. That's where I'm trying to go, is the timing on that.
And I can address one comment. So one of the neighbor that was against, they did purchase this house in early 2016. And what the claims on that issue were, that whenever they moved in, the intensity from there has increased over time. And that's what was the evidence on the 2014 map to this 2016 map, is the intensity from there did increase. The tree farm obviously is still there. Which is the allowed use, but the intensity of use did increase over that couple-year period, which does meet with the applicant's timeline of purchasing the property in 2015.
But I guess what I'm getting at is that when they purchased the property, that use of that land to the north was not an approved use at that time. The tree farm would have been, but this is not.
Correct.
Okay. And then I have a question for our attorney.
Go ahead.
If... Relative to this discussion on the fence, I personally tend to agree that putting 2 6-foot fences on each side of a trail is probably not a great idea for a whole lot of reasons, and we could potentially put in a condition for screening. My question is, since it's in the land development code, if we were to do this, just, I don't know that we will, but if we were to not have the condition for the fence, would it be sufficient simply to omit the condition? Or, because it's in the land development code, would we need a positive statement to the effect that we're granting, that we recommend a variance to that requirement?
I think that you should make a positive statement as a condition, because the fence, the purpose of the fence, at least one purpose would be for mitigation.
Right.
This is a variance. You have great discretion in approving a variance and imposing conditions on it. Therefore, you would be looking at, if you have a safety concern with regards to putting an additional 6-foot fence there, and you feel that potentially additional landscaping, for instance, additional tree planting, would accomplish a similar type of mitigation, then my recommendation is that if you choose to do that, then you substantiate that as part of your condition.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Mr. Dossi?
Mr. Chair, if that is kind of the direction that the Planning Commission wants to go, for staff's purposes, what I would recommend is that you acknowledge on the record that you don't feel like that is an additional fence is necessary to address compatibility issues. Perhaps additional landscaping is, I don't know. But that also the applicant be required to update or revise the letter of intent to specifically request a waiver of that requirement in the land development code. That way it authorizes me as the director to approve the site development plan without a fence shown on there, which obviously this would have to be the same feeling with the Board of County Commissioners, but if the Planning Commission feels that way and the Board of County Commissioners feels that way, it authorizes me to basically ignore that requirement in the land development code. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Dillon.
When I was first listening to you, I was picturing this narrow trail with two fences on both sides, and I don't. When you reminded us that that is a 30-foot corridor, those two fences aren't going to be all that bad. It's really not going to be. And I understand what people using the trail say, that they would prefer the fence to looking at. Want us to think about that as we go forward.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Go ahead. Is there anything from engineering, or that's all taken care of, right?
Yes, I'm good.
Okay. Is there, would the applicant like to make any comments at this point in time? You always get a chance to correct the record.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I may have missed it, but just for the record, would you please ask for any additional comments by those in favor and any for opposition, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cole. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to speak in favor?
I'm Dan Cole. I'm the owner of Mountain Splendor. And my question is...
Could you sign in,
sure,
just for the record? Go ahead, please.
My question is, if I'm required to do all this stuff to, I guess, screen from the housing who moved in after I've been there, why is it okay for the developer who developed this to ignore the landscape plan, which would have done exactly what I'm having to do?
I think it's because you did not have a variance for your use. Had you obtained a variance prior to this, then they would have been on notice, and this whole issue wouldn't be dealing with this.
Obviously, I'm not an attorney. Okay,
that's not bad.
No, I know. I'd prefer it that way. When I moved in, you know, I bought it from my brother. I don't know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. He had two skids. I have five. Okay, my guys, when they come to work every April, I bring them in on work visas. I spend a lot of money to do everything legally. So coming in there, I have a couple more trucks than he had, a couple more skids than he had. I go to work every morning. We had no problems until the lady in the corner filed a grievance, and what she filed is made up. She's not impacted by anything as far as my guys don't show up to work until a quarter till seven. I think the city code says that we can't make a lot of noise until 7 o'clock. So they come in. We are pretty careful about that because we know there's a conflict. There's going to be, and it'll continue to be until we're bought out and housing comes in. That's my opinion. I store more stuff there than what they want in their backyard. In the late letter of complaint, she said we've destroyed the wetlands. We're running off the wildlife. I'd like her to come over and count the rabbits at my place and go back. There's a pond, a detention pond back there that's been there for probably 50 years. It's full of cattails. We have ducks and geese that are there all the time. So we're pretty careful. The real reason is she bought a house and backs up against the landscape company. That's where all this came from.
Yeah, I understand all that. But to answer your question, the only reason you're here is because you don't have a variance that allows that to happen.
No, I understand that, but as a non-lawyer, how am I to know that? When I buy a business that's relatively the same, I buy a building that's been used for that, the question come up about building permits. I believe that until approximately 2008, 2009, the county building requirements, where it was unannexed, didn't require anything but a state electrical inspection. I built a 5,000 square foot shop in Cowhan, put up a red iron building, the whole nine yards. The only inspection I had to have at that time was a state electrical inspection. I had two inspections, one when I started and a final. And all the buildings that are on there will meet all the state requirements for electrical inspection without any problem. The greenhouses are temporary. The pole barn, it is improved. It's got electric and stuff, so I can keep it warm in the winter. But it'll pass all the electrical inspection, which at the time was what was required.
Well, the reason the eight of us are here is to make sure that the Land Development Code rules make sense in a specific instance.
Okay. So.
You have brought us a specific instance.
Sure.
Thank you. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. Anybody in the audience who would like to speak against? Okay, we'll go back now since I've gotten in the proper order.
Yes. There was just a couple of points I wanted to clarify. First, about the timing, and it was touched upon then. I think when staff produced the photographs going back through time and showing the changes in the business, it was very evident to me that there was really very little change in the context of the site between Mr. Combs' brother operating it as a tree farm and him then coming in and operating it as a landscape contractor. And I think, yes, obviously we're here to address a variance of use because it is a different use, but I think the reason that Mr. Combs didn't feel that he was changing the nature of the business or changing the nature of the conditions of the site, that he was unaware that he had that requirement to get that variance. Just to clarify, the Quail Brush subdivision phase two was approved in February of 2015. The first residence didn't come into that subdivision until November 2016 and June 2017 for that row across the bottom. So they came in after Mr. Combs started the operation as a landscape business in 2015. So I just wanted to clarify that. Regarding procedures on the waiver of the landscape requirement, Mr. Dossie indicated that we would have to include it in our letter of intent. We did with our original submittal. So if you look at page 14 of your packet, there's a whole paragraph there, whole section referencing the landscape buffer. And the second paragraph of that specifically asks for a waiver on the number of trees in the buffer and the provision of an opaque fence. As we've indicated, we are willing to increase the number of trees in the buffer in preference of providing the opaque fence, but that request for a waiver was specifically included with our original submittal. Staff came back and said that they would like us to include the opaque fence, as we did, but we are now requesting from you that that be waived because of our feelings that it's not an appropriate treatment for the site. So I just want to know that in terms of procedurally, it was in there as a waiver, and we have requested that.
Thank you. Mr. Cole, does that address your concern?
I defer to Mr. Dossie. He's the one that indicated the need for the waiver mentioned okay. in the letter.
All right. I got the wrong authority.
He will never speak on behalf of me. I've tried and tried, and he just won't do it. I think that addresses it. I do think if that's the decision of the Planning Commission, we want to make sure the record reflects that you feel like it's not needed from a compatibility standpoint. I think that's the bigger issue because that's typically why that requirement is in play with a use like this is it's a screening issue in order to make it aesthetically more compatible with something like single-family residential. So if that's the decision of the Planning Commission, I want to make sure that's not only discussed right now as we're talking about it, but even, and I'll defer to Cole, but I think it should be part of the motion in terms of not requiring that condition, because what we do from the staff's perspective is we may still have our kind of recommendation of the board, and it may differ from yours. I'm not saying it will, but we want to make sure that we articulate your recommendation as clearly as we can. So if we can make that part of your recommendation, I would encourage you to do that.
Thank you.
I agree.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Curry.
Thank you. Just to clarify, I'm looking at the letter of intent just for the record so people can hear. The letter of intent does, in fact, ask for that waiver. It says, and I quote, the applicant is requesting that opaque fencing not be required to also be installed along the southern property boundary. So that request is in the letter of intent. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the commission? Mr. Gioia.
Another question.
Would you like to make a motion?
Well, I think I'd rather take a couple minutes to put together how I would like to phrase a new condition. Before we do that, can we take 5 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, that'd be great.
Thank you. You'd like session?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Mr. Emmons, was there something?
I was just going to give the applicants a planner a heads up on where you were going, but go ahead.
Okay.
All right. Before I make a motion, I just want to make the statement that the prior condition, the condition number 3, requiring a 6-foot, 100% opaque fence along the southern boundary, does not appear necessary for compatibility purposes. So as part of my motion, I will be recommending a replacement of that condition. So, that in mind,
in regard... Since we're changing sort of what's going on. Is there a copy you can provide to the applicants and see if they want to speak to that?
Would you like to take a look first?
That's the language I plan to use.
Looking at her. She's saying the 21.
Your letter says we'll install 21 Austrian pines along the southern boundary in addition to the existing 1 pine tree and 11 deciduous trees. Thank you.
intent, because the intent was to have 21 total, including the existing. So we show 29 additional.
Are you ready to proceed with your motion? Okay, go ahead.
All right, Mr. Chair, in regards, regular item number 3, VA-17-010, Mountain Splendor Services Contractors Equipment Yard and Office, variance of use. I recommend approval under the new standard resolution, page 51, with 5 conditions and 3 notations, replacing the condition number 3 in our packet with this wording. In lieu of a 6-foot privacy fence, applicant will plant within 120 days of approval 15 Austrian pine trees along the southern property boundary as visual screening.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any comments, discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Ms. Friedman.
Yes, I had heard, I believe, in the applicant's presentation that these trees were to be 10 foot tall when they were planted, but I didn't see documentation of that in the notes. Maybe I just missed it, but I think that's an important item to be specific about.
Okay.
If that is indeed the case, if that is indeed the applicant's intention.
If you wish, you can move to amend the motion to so speak, and if you have a second, we could vote on that and then we'll move on.
I would like to move to amend that to add specify 10 foot trees.
All right.
Second.
Is there a second?
Yep.
Any comments or discussion? Then we'll just quickly go through the roll.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have a couple of comments, if I could.
Certainly.
And then another question, because Mr. Dossie earlier raised the issue of having to modify the letter of intent to request the fence be removed. Well, it was already in there. But now that we've changed the condition, the letter of intent indicates that the applicant would install 21 Australian pines. We're now proposing 15. And we understand that number 21 was an error in the original letter of intent. Do we need to also change the letter of intent, or does the condition specifying a number make it so that you can approve as... I'm just trying to make sure we get all the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
Sure. I don't think it needs to be part of your motion. We can work with the applicant to make sure that gets revised prior to the Board of County Commissioners, assuming that they would still be in agreement with that. If they're not still in agreement with that, then that's going to be a discussion with the Board of County Commissioners, the difference between the number of trees. So I'm comfortable with that. We'll just work with them to revise that.
Thank you. So... Yeah, if I could, I was just going to comment on, I'm looking at the conditions under which we approve variances, and one is going to create a hardship, and other than not being able to occupy operate the business, but for me the biggie is harmony and compatibility, and I tend to discount the applicant's comments that when the homes were purchased in 2016, this business was there. It was not a legal business at the time. It was not an authorized use. And so anybody buying the homes, I think, has a reasonable expectation that uses in and around the property are consistent with the zoning. So I somewhat discount that. That said, I don't find the use to be significantly different, except in intensity. And so I think I am comfortable with the conditions of harmony, compatibility, and compliance, and that along with the new condition, I would be comfortable that the adverse impacts have been taken care of. So I would be inclined to vote in favor of the motion with the new wording.
Any other comments? Yes, Ms. Reese.
I concur. I believe that with the change in the conditions of the 10-foot tree, that it is compatible to and not marginally different from what had been there in the past. And I think that it meets the compatibility argument.
Okay, any other comments? Then the question on the floor is to amend to specifically state 10-foot trees, and we'll work on that motion. Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
Ms. Friedman?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So the original motion is amended, and now we'll vote on the original motion. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, we'll move ahead. Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
Ms. Friedman?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and the motion is approved. And with that, unless we need another break, we will invite Mr. Dossie.
Quickly. Looks like more than
Well, good morning again. I guess for the record, I should identify myself, Craig Dossie, Executive Director of Planning and Community Development for the county. Nancy, could I get the overhead, please? I'm going to go through the usual business that we usually conduct in terms of some of our report items, and then I'll launch into the presentation. As I normally do, update you on some of the actions taken by the Board of County Commissioners. The Rock Creek Metro District Service Plan was approved by the Planning Commission at a vote of 5-2. That was ultimately scheduled for the board, and then there was a continuance because the applicant couldn't make the date. Ultimately, that was approved by the Board of County Commissioners on January 23rd at a vote of 4-1. There were two consent items. Those were both final plats for Jackson Ranch. Those are filings 3 and 4. Those were approved unanimously by the Planning Commission and by the Board of County Commissioners. And then lastly, there was the rezoning for Lorison Ranch East. That was the rather large PUD that was both a PUD and a preliminary plan. That was approved by the Planning Commission unanimously and by the Board of County Commissioners unanimously. Any questions on those?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr.
The Curry. Question we always ask you when there's a dissenting vote on the Board of County Commissioners, can you tell us who that was and what their rationale was, please?
I believe on that particular item, if I'm not mistaken, that was Commissioner Gonzalez. Cole's gone. There he is. On Rock Creek Metro. Do you remember what his concerns were?
Financing.
I was there, and I don't recall. There's too many hearings in my life, I guess. I don't know.
There was quite a bit of discussion and fears expressed by members of the existing development that this metro district was going to come in and essentially do a hostile takeover of the existing water district. And I think that is probably what drove the decision.
And I think there were some statements made by the public. And I think when it came before you all, there really weren't that many members from the public here. But there were certainly a great deal more at the Board of County Commissioners. Some of their concerns were...
The Metro District came in before the rezoning and the subdivision.
Yeah.
We typically don't like to see that, but sometimes it happens. And therefore, a question comes up as to whether the proposed level of financing is going to be sufficient. Because you may get into the development stage and figure out it's not, and so then you're going to have to come back to the board for an amendment of the service plan. And I think that also probably gave Commissioner Gonzalez some concerns.
And to that point, if you recall, there is a policy in the county special district policies that recommends that the land use approvals be in place prior to trying to get approval of the service plan. So Commissioner Gonzalez, I think, really spoke to that. But I really do think that more than just Commissioner Gonzalez was focused on that issue. And as Cole stated, what we get into is we're looking at a financial plan that basically is based on conjecture, because at that point they don't know what their densities are going to be. They don't even know what their uses are going to be, for that matter. So it's not the first time we've seen that happen. I recall Foray Ranch when we did the district for that. They went through the same process. They ran the district ahead of the zoning. But we do put in a condition, if you recall, on this one, when we did it on Foray Ranch also, that the district wouldn't be authorized to issue debt until zoning is achieved. So that at least gives some peace of mind that whatever financial plan is tied to that district accurately reflects what the eventual land use will be. So I'm glad Cole remembered, because that was a very lengthy discussion about the order in which districts should come in. One of the other concerns that we have with districts in the timing is you can bring in a rezoning at any time, and you can be heard by the Board of County Commissioners and by you all within a matter of months. Districts are heard three times every 2 years. So timing in terms of getting on the ballot to form the district sometimes is challenging. So you will see, and I think that was the case with Foray Ranch, you will see the district ahead of the zoning because they're trying to target a certain election timeline. That was not the case here, but we have seen that in the past. So moving on. I'm going to get into a little bit more detail in terms of 2017, but just bring you up to speed on what's happened already this year. If you look at residential building permits, this is broken down by jurisdiction. This is pretty typical. We're about half what the city is. There does seem to be somewhat of an uptick in the city of Fountain. They're at about 10%, which I think is a pretty large chunk of the pie for them most months. And then overall, we've seen 105 in the county and 285 in the city. And what you'll see in one of my slides in the PowerPoint is there is a substantial amount of development happening, not only in the county, but the uptick in the city is very noteworthy. So we'll talk about that in more detail. Nancy, if we could, can we switch back to the PowerPoint, please? So first, I want to thank you all for indulging me a little bit here. It's kind of a look into the world of what we do on a daily basis. I think we have a lot of, we take a lot of ownership in what you all do. You are our planning commission, and so we're, we want to make sure that what we're doing as a staff is reflective of what you would like to see and what the Board of County Commissioners would like to see. And for that reason, we want to make sure that you're aware of all the things that we're doing, because you don't get to see everything that we do. So just quickly, the things I'm going to talk about, I'm going to go through some of our annual statistics, which some of you have seen in the past. I have some both impressive and sort of sad code enforcement pictures, some of the abatement projects that we undertook over the course of 2017. Briefly go over some of the code amendments which you all saw prior to the Board of County Commissioners adoption. Continue the discussion on some of the operational changes that we've continued to make and some of the upgrades that we're looking forward to, both this year and maybe even beyond. So kind of launching into it, I do report to you at least once a month, seems like, kind of the statistics of how we're doing from a major development application standpoint. And those are the ones that typically involve both a planner and an engineer. If you look at the course of the last 10 years, you can see 2007 was really kind of the banner year prior to the recession, and then that dropped off as low as 163 in 2011. Where we are now for 2017 is, I think, where we're going to be probably moving forward. When you start seeing the numbers of what's happening in the city, I think the county's kind of balancing out. I think a lot of it was 2016. You know, of course, a lot of that was using up some of that inventory of zoned properties that hadn't gone through the platting process. We don't have a substantial amount of commercial, but we do have some. So what that 367 number looks like for 2017 is 230 type C, and those are the administrative ones that you all don't see, but that still require a planner and engineer, and then 137 hearing-based applications. Those are your final plats, rezonings, PUDs, those kind of things. I continue to preach this, that in 2007, we had 18 reviewers. That's combined engineers and planners. They averaged basically 22.1 projects per person per year. In 2017, we had half as many reviewers, and they averaged 40.8. So basically twice as many projects per staff member per year. That is not sustainable. I surely everybody can appreciate that. We're working on that. We're having some challenges hiring engineers with things going as well as they are out in the real world, in the construction area of things. We just simply can't compete from a salary standpoint with some of those private sector employers. So what we've done instead of trying to draw somebody down from the Denver metro area is we've started advertising nationwide. And what we're seeing is a much better return in terms of the number of applications. And quite frankly, I think the reason why, and this is confirmed usually in interviews when I ask them, why do you want to move to Colorado? Usually the answer is, well, I just want to be in Colorado. So I think that's certainly important for us to kind of capitalize on that interest. You know, it's hard to draw people down from a job that pays more and would require them to move. I think it's a lot easier to draw people to where they want to live. And so we're trying to capitalize on that. We are trying to hire two more engineers this year. Both of those positions close this month, so we're hoping to fill both of them.
Just a quick question. How many more reviewers are you hoping to hire?
Right now, just the two engineers. You know, it's always a challenge, and those of you that have been in a leadership position probably would agree. If you bring in too many new people at once, it actually reduces productivity. Yeah. Because you're spending all your time in training of those that are, you know, really your productive folks. So we have to kind of temper that a little bit. If things continue at the pace that they have really since 2014, I think it's going to be incumbent upon us to increase that number. I think we're in a good position with the planning staff, but I do think that there may be a need to hire even more engineers than the two we already have posted. I also usually update you on the minor development applications. These are applications that you never see. There are things like single-family residence site plans that are done at the front counter, driveway permits that involve our inspection staff going out and making sure that the proposed location of the driveway is safe, and that if there's a culvert needed, that they recommend that, as well as some minor commercial site plans. We saw an increase of exactly 4, which is, I don't know how you get that close year over year. But those, again, we refer to these as our type A's and B's, and those are things that are processed at the front counter. I'm going to get into it a little bit later, in terms of our EDART program, but that is the area that we're working on right now in order to make those applications available to be processed electronically, which will obviously change everything we do and ultimately result in us being completely paperless. We did see an increase in revenue on our minor development applications year over year to the tune of about $5,000 increase. In terms of single family residences, I touched on this a little bit earlier with the city of Colorado Springs. You can see from year 2014 to 2017, their number has almost doubled. It's been a substantial increase of about 800 single-family residences. This does not fold in the multifamily, and I've reported on that to you in the past. There's obviously a strong push, as we're all aware, to densify the city. That'll be in their comp plan as well. So I anticipate that the multifamily numbers will probably only increase as the years go on, at least in the near term. This, I think, gives you a good idea of kind of where most of the activity is. I think really all the jurisdictions, you know, it's hard to measure 4, 5, and 7, but if you look at Fountain and Monument, certainly Monument has seen a substantial increase. And in discussions with them, they're kind of feeling the growth a little bit more up there. And there are some concerns about water and whatnot in that area. And those are, you know, there are issues, obviously, because any issue with any of the municipalities tends to bleed into the county, but they are looking at some of those concerns on their end. But this hopefully gives you an idea where the county sits in the overall scheme. You know, one of the things that we don't talk about much, certainly with this group, is our constructions or construction inspections group. These are guys that are out in the field every day. They're working with the builders, the developers, to inspect development-related improvements. Last year, if you recall, was the first year that we started performing sidewalk inspections prior to authorization of the CO, which is the Certificate of Occupancy that is processed by Regional Building. We have a role in that now. We never have in the past. That was something that was actually suggested as a solution by the HBA. It wasn't something that staff suggested. And historically, the county's kind of stayed away from that because we don't want to get between the end buyer and them getting into their dream home. But what I think has happened is we've really addressed an issue that was creating a lot of cost for the county. In working with the HBA, we were able to develop the inspection program. Last year, 2017, again being the first year, we did 606 sidewalk inspections. That is not stones, that is the lot within which the sidewalk is in front of. Of those, 86 failed, which was approximately a 14% failure rate. What I will note on that is those are only the ones that weren't repaired before we inspected. Some of them obviously are going to be repaired before we go out because they know they're going to fail. So, you know, you can look at the failure rate, but really what you want to look at is the capture rate of how many of these are we actually addressing through the program. And now that they're aware that the program is in place, some of those are being torn out and replaced before we ever get out there. But when just estimating based upon those that failed, there was a savings to the county, you know, assuming we would go out and replace it right away, in today's dollars of somewhere between $70,000 and $100,000. So, you know, if you compound that with inflation and increased cost of construction materials, let's say the county doesn't get to it for 5 or 10 years, you can obviously increase this dollar amount. Ultimately, about 11 miles of sidewalk were accepted at a value of just over $1.1 million. Our inspection staff, again, made up of basically 3 to 4 individuals, performed 1,300 driveway inspections, 315 stormwater inspections, and 1,600, almost 1,700 subdivision inspections. That is a very busy group. The stormwater inspections is really something that we've that I've pushed because of some of the litigation between the city and CDPH&E. We're really kind of helping out Public Works. That onus falls on their stormwater division over there. But I thought that while our inspection staff was out in the field and we already have eyes on the project, why can't we help kind of carry some of that burden? So they've been very active. You know, it's weird because you look at the numbers and you say, well, we only issued 20 construction permits, but you got to remember a construction permit might be for 600 lots. And within that, you might have, you know, 1,800 inspections. So the construction permit number really is never going to be that impressive. Every year, our group does a separate spreadsheet from Public Works. We look at the value of public improvements that went through our process and ultimately were accepted by the county. In 2017, the county accepted development-related public improvements valued at $5.5 million versus $13.8 in 2016 and $5.8 in 2015. I think somewhere around $6 million is where we will normally be. I think last year was sort of a blip on the radar. I think that was what you saw was coming out of the recession, this huge bump coming out of the recession. And you know, a lot of that's subject to timing, because if you don't get all the improvements done before the end of the construction window going into winter, then they're going to all carry over to the next year. There were 21, Chair, this was, I think, your question a couple meetings ago. There was about 21 lane miles of new public road accepted by the county for maintenance. Approximately 6.5 of that came through the development process. So the other 15 or so was county or PPRTA project-related lane miles. One of the things that I think we've never shown you, but I think is probably noteworthy, is if you recall, we deal with development agreements, both subdivision improvement agreements and then kind of just kind of one-off development agreements. Through those development agreements, the developers required to provide us with a financial assurance estimate for the value of performing the construction, all the way from roads to drainage to sidewalks to grading and erosion control, all of those things. The financial assurance that we accepted in 2017 was about $8.3 million. The amount that we released was $4.5 million. So what that tells me is we're going to see an uptick in those numbers I just talked about in terms of the value of construction moving forward. And we do have staff, our inspection staff has to work with some of our admin staff to track that. As you can imagine, tracking all of these instruments, you have letters of credit, you have bonds, you have cash, you have, you know, cashier's checks, all these things that come in, tracking those to make sure that, one, they don't expire before the county capitalizes on if the improvements aren't done, or two, we release them. We have to take that to the Board of County Commissioners to release those funds. That is a huge undertaking. We have one person that's basically assigned to that particular task. Probably the most significant change that we've seen as a group, certainly out in the field, is with regard to code enforcement. We have three code enforcement officers presently. We're in the process of hiring an additional one. In 2017, they processed 865 complaints. That was a reduction down from 1,096 in 2016. But I think what explains that is, if you recall, in 2016, there were a lot of early rains in the summer. So if you look at our weed complaints, in 2016 we had 850 versus 2017 we had 590. I think 590 is probably where we would normally be, although if it doesn't start raining soon, it might even go down further. So I don't know. But we did have an increase in the zoning complaints. So some of the things that you all see, some of these contractors' equipment yards, those kind of things that come before you, actually initiated as a result of a zoning complaint, where we get a call from a neighbor or we're driving by and we see it happen, we'll issue a notice of violation. They have to come in and basically ask for forgiveness to get a special use or a variance of use approved. So that we've seen a huge increase. I mean, 30 is a pretty big number in terms of zoning complaint increase. Of the 865 complaints that we processed, 357 involved the county attorney's office versus 353 in 2016. What that means is those other 500 some odd complaints were able to be resolved at the staff level. We were able to get those properties cleaned up or the weeds cut down, whatever the case may be. 73 of those complaints were brought to the Board of County Commissioners. That is a huge amount of time by our staff and by the county attorney's office staff to bring 73 complaints to the Board of County Commissioners. If you recall, a few months back, we brought a request to you to update, to revise the procedures for code enforcement to make the authorization of litigation an administrative decision. So now my position has the authority to authorize the county attorney's office to pursue litigation. Obviously, that's a huge time savings for staff, huge cost savings for the county to not have, really, it turns out to be four or five staff members, both from our office and the county attorney's office, processing these to get them before the board. And it's going to cut down on the timeline so that we can be more responsive to the neighbors. Probably, as I alluded to, one of the biggest impacts is what is happening out in the field. Historically, our office has not actively pursued abatement of complaint properties. We've kind of put the pressure on them, and we've put liens against the property, but we've never had the funds to actually go out and do something about it ourselves. That all changed last year. I requested, and the Board of County Commissioners approved, a line item in our budget of $25,000 to prioritize projects that we think will make a big difference if we can go out and perform that abatement, whether it's cutting down weeds, removing rubbish, whatever the case may be. So what has happened is, in the last 2 years, 15 and 16, we abated one property, and usually those were the worst case scenarios or one that's really causing a problem in the neighborhood. That all changed last year. We spent over $25,000 abating properties. I say over $25,000 because that was only what came out of our budget. There's going to be one that I show you that came out of the solid waste fund with our environmental services department. That was to the tune of $109,000. And you'll see why that was an important cleanup project when I show you the pictures. So the first one I want to show you, and I reorganized these. Mindy Madden, who's our code enforcement supervisor, put all of the worst ones first, and I thought, well, for effect, let's save those at the very end. So this was kind of a small one. This was only $615. It was kind of one of the ones we did towards the end of the year to exhaust the fund. But this was a weed complaint. As you can see, the property owner's basically doing nothing with the property. A lot of complaints from the neighbors. So we requested an entry warrant from the judge that was awarded so that we could go out and clean the property. You can see kind of the before and after. Those were somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 7 feet tall. The next one, yes. Well, we do have a few companies that we use. Probably the one that we use the most frequently is Junk King, and they do give the county a kind of a discount because we do use them routinely. I mean for $600 that was kind of a no-brainer. So the next one's in the Callahan area. Yes.
Am I correct in assuming that this house looks to be in Colorado Center Metro District? Is that correct?
All I have is wide field area. I try not to point at any particular area too much.
No, we've had some issues, and it just looks very much like our area.
I will say that you're probably not incorrect.
Thank you.
The next one's in Callahan. This was just a one-day event, but it was five truckloads. Cost was $2,000. This was one of those situations where I made the decision to prioritize this one. There were some family issues associated with this family. The mother lost her child, and her husband left her, and she had no means of disposing of her own household waste. So we stepped up. Obviously, she's going to have to pay the county back. What happens is we send them a bill. If they don't pay the bill, then we lien the property. But this one floated to the top based upon the circumstances, and I think it was very justified. As you can see, most of this is just, I mean, it's literally garbage. It's not hoarding of any materials. It's just trash. You know, in an area like Callahan, if you do this, not only does the wildlife get into it, but it begins to blow and cover other neighboring properties. So this was something that we felt like we could do something about in fairly short order. You know, it's never going to be, you know, green grass underneath out in the Callahan area, but you can see it was just household stuff thrown out in the yard. The next one was down in security. This one cost just under $3,000. It was 7 truckloads. This one, we start getting into kind of our bigger ticket items here. Just a lot of stuff out in the yard. Kind of the rest of the story, so to speak. Shortly after we cleaned it up, you can see the building caught fire. We are working with our regional building department to amend their regulations, which will be going to the Board of County Commissioners on February 27th, to reinstitute the dangerous buildings provision of the regional building code as it applies to the county. It was removed by the county, or at the request of the county, from the code, and there's specific language in there right now that still says that we can approach it from a code enforcement standpoint, but by changing the building code, we can kind of put pressure on both sides, both from regional building and from our side, when we do have dangerous buildings. Obviously, this structure should not be inhabited, but unfortunately, it still is.
Oh, my word.
So you can see, I mean, it's just stuff sitting in the front yard. I mean, it's just bags of trash. Just stuff piled up in the backyard. And afterwards, everything is organized, put where it should go. You know, sometimes they look at it as an opportunity to assemble a whole new collection. That does happen. But hopefully some of the activities that we encourage them to pursue stick, and we won't see it again. So this particular one was a 2-day cleanup. It involved 12 truckloads of material, just under $5,000. And this was kind of an assortment of both household waste as well as you can see a collection of this and that. This particular property owner seemed to enjoy bicycles. I'm not sure how many bikes a person needs, but we do allow them to keep some things. Those that are in working order, an appropriate number, and we are required to itemize everything that we take in the event that they challenge in front of a judge that something was worth a substantial amount. We do itemize it. Sometimes we have to store it in a certain location. But we do try to work with them. It's not us being strong-armed. We really do want to work with them so they can keep things that are of value. And but we do have an interest in seeing the property cleaned up. This was the front yard. So they had begun the process of sort of cleaning up, but it only works if you actually dump the dumpster. That's the after. You can see a lot of the materials that were stored in that carport are now gone. All the other materials were gone. The dumpster's gone. I don't always go out to the cleanup sites. I try to make it when I can. I did actually personally go out and look at this one. This was a 4-day cleanup. It was 23 truckloads, about $9,500. What I want to note on this and why I champion our code enforcement officers so much, this property owner was threatening not only our code enforcement officer, their lives, but also the lives of the sheriff's deputies that served the entry warrant. It was a very uncomfortable situation. I didn't go out because it was uncomfortable. I went out because I think it's important to support our code enforcement officers. The topography of this property is such that the neighbor could look down into the yard, and what you're going to see is a series of fencing. It basically was kind of like an onion. It just kept going outside of whatever they were storing. The pictures don't tell 100% of the story, but I'm going to go through them anyway. Again, we did allow them to keep some items. This, again, this is a 5-acre piece of property, so it's a pretty substantial collection. So that's the after. Again, we did allow them to keep things that were in working order. An item of note, you can see this sort of haphazard addition to the structure. There's no evidence that we could find that indicated that the structure was not constructed prior to the requirement for a building permit, so there was nothing we can do about it. But I do know that when you use particle board as siding, you can count on that structure not lasting very long. So I think it's going to be an issue in the future, but there's really nothing we could do about it. The landowner's son lived in that. Believe it or not, he was more volatile than the landowner. So again, it was sort of like a labyrinth of fencing to get through the entire property. It took me probably 20 minutes to, at a pretty good pace, to walk through the entire site. The next one is in the security area. This is a 6,400 square foot lot. It was a 2-day cleanup, required 17 truckloads, just under $6,000 to clean it up. We're building to the crescendo here. This is probably the second most intensive one that we cleaned up. You can see the before and after. I think probably the most difficult thing with this particular cleanup was in each of these outbuildings, there was somebody actually living in them. There was no central heat, no central water. They had kind of fashioned heating devices within there. When we started cleaning them up, they came out, and of course we had to ask them to kindly leave. They were basically harboring these folks in their backyard. I'm sorry? Well, it's really easy to do when you have the sheriff's deputy there with you. They tend to be more motivated when the sheriff's deputy is there. Now, obviously, they may come back. And it becomes a zoning issue because this is not zoned for multifamily or two dwelling or whatever the case may be. We try to be sensitive to that, but you know, I'm also sensitive to the neighbors' issues and some of the activities that were occurring on this site outside of just collecting junk were very unsavory, and it was very important for us to kind of keep an eye on this property.
So you basically need a court order on each one of them?
We have to get an entry warrant from the judge, yes.
Okay. And that entry
is served by the sheriff's office. They are great to work with. We have a few that we routinely work with, very supportive. If we ask them to kind of hang around, they'll spend their entire shift there, and then they'll trade off with somebody else so that if it feels like it's a difficult situation for our officers or even myself to be in, they will make sure that they have a presence on site, which I think is great collaboration. Obviously, you know, they don't have to do that. It's something that they want to do to help our department. And you know, we collaborate with a lot of the offices. Obviously, the county attorney's office has to work with the court, has to work with the Board of County Commissioners. So these things don't happen overnight. Sometimes it takes years to get to the point of getting an entry warrant.
But your entry warrant gives you the authority to remove people from unsafe dwellings?
That's right.
Okay.
It could. We're not there yet.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. On February 27th, the discussion will now include regional building, whereas right now it does not.
All right.
So you can see the before and after. I mean, it's amazing how much stuff was actually on site. So I mentioned one of these required funding from our solid waste fund. This happened early in 2017. It had been an issue for years. And the reason why it had been an issue for years is we had a lot of challenges serving the property owner, because the property owner was out of state, and then they were in a different state, and then they transferred ownership to their son, who then transferred it back. And so they were really trying to avoid service. Finally, we were able to get that entry warrant. We were able to get the funds to clean up this property. This is by far the biggest cleanup that El Paso County has ever undertaken. This was all over the news. There were single-family homes immediately adjacent to what was going on this property, and it wasn't just the rubbish that was the problem, and I'm going to get into that. So this is in an area of the county that's an enclave. We're talking about an area near Oro Blanco and Austin Bluffs. Really, it's right in the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. Most people think it's the city, and it's not. I'm sure the city got lots of complaints about our problem, but finally we were able to get the entry warrant to go in there. There were 13 of these construction trailers. These were old construction trailers. I assume the property owner was paid to take them and just plopped them down on this property, ultimately making it everybody's problem in the neighborhood. Some of these were actually located within the right-of-way. We went out and surveyed it. The judge allowed us to move them out of the right-of-way, so I was able to coordinate with Jim Reed with Public Works to go out with a front-end loader and kindly squeeze them back into the property. We couldn't do anything at that time with regard to the cleanup, but we could move them out of the right-of-way because it was unsafe. What was happening on site was there were many individuals living in these. There was obvious drug abuse occurring in these structures. There was obvious activity from some of the resident teenagers doing what teenagers do. When the sheriff's deputies served the entry warrant, or when they showed up on the property prior to cleanup, there were, I believe, two individuals living in two of these trailers. There was dry cleaning hanging in their respective unit. The sheriff's deputies took them, forced them out, told them they needed to leave, bought them breakfast, and then we were able to proceed with the cleanup. This was something that was attended by, I think, all the media outlets during the cleanup. And what you saw was really a coordinated effort between Environmental Services, Public Works, our group, the Public Information Officer, even the city of Colorado Springs, because some of the roads were theirs. We had to block the roads off. I mean, it was everything was just falling apart. You can see there was a fire there on that wall. I don't probably have to tell you what kind of things we found in the buildings and as well as on the property. So the warrant allowed us to not only remove the construction trailers, but also clean up all the rubbish that was on site as well. So as I said, we were able to get an entry warrant. We hired a contractor to come in and demolish the structures on site. They were able to remove everything. Multiple truckloads obviously spent, I think it was about a week it took to actually demolish everything. They were able to sell the chassis of the trailers as scrap, as salvage, so it reduced the cost somewhat to the county. But again, this didn't come out of our budget. Obviously, $25,000 was never going to approach the ticket price on this. And I'm just going to say it was $110,000, and the property's not worth $110,000. So what I'm telling you is the county will probably never recover the costs associated with the decisions of this landowner. Again, kind of the rest of the story. There's a house, it's actually not this house, it's the one next to it. I think it's in this picture. Let's see, this one right here. The cleanup started on Monday. It was completed by Thursday. On Saturday, they were hosting their son's rehearsal dinner at their house. Surely I don't have to tell you, they were elated to know that the property was gonna be cleaned up literally hours before they were gonna host this event. I don't like the idea of I guess, government kind of, you know, incurring the cost, but I think sometimes it's the role of the government to make things right in a neighborhood, and I think that's what we did here. So overall, code enforcement coordinated the cleanup of 7 properties, 6 out of our budget, and then the additional one. You know, what we don't recover is the cost associated with staff time, and it was over 100 hours just doing cleanup. That's not getting them to the entry warrant, getting it before the board. That was just the cleanup. So total, we're looking at about $135,000 in cleanup activities just in 2017. Obviously, a banner year. I'd prefer that it wasn't a banner year, obviously, but I think we did a lot of good in the properties that we chose. Any questions on the code enforcement cleanup process or any of the abatement projects that we worked on?
What's the chance that your $25,000 budget?
That's a great question. Obviously, this year it was kind of a trial period, right? See how much good we could do with the $25,000 that they did give us. I have talked to one of the commissioners where a lot of this activity is occurring. I've shown him the pictures. I am going to do the same presentation to the Board of County Commissioners. His sentiment was, well, it looks like you could have used a lot more than $25,000. And my answer is, yeah, we could. So I think if there's support there, I'm going to request probably doubling that number. You know, if we don't use it all, that's great. But I think the important thing is not that we're cleaning it up, because, you know, the one I showed you with all the construction trailers, the neighbors were just at their wit's end. I mean, it took years to get to the point of resolution. But now with the administrative process and the ability to get an entry warrant, we can be so much more responsive to those neighbors. And in my opinion, those are the folks that we need to be doing this for. It's not for the landowner. The landowner is going to still pay the price that it costs to clean it up. When you talk to the neighbors, and that's another reason why I go out to the properties, is I want to go talk to the neighbors and let them know not only what's happening, but also, you know, that we heard you. It just takes some time to get through the court process. But the relief on their faces is just insurmountable. Even on the smallest project where we had the weeds, I mean, people just are so fearful of, you know, it happening again. And, you know, because you can't control what your neighbors are going to do with their property. And for us to step up and kind of incur that cost, knowing that it's going to take some time to get those funds back, I mean, they're just, it looks like, you know, 1,000 pounds were lifted off their shoulders. So for, if nothing else, that reason, I think I am going to probably request an increase to the fund. Maybe it's $50,000. I don't know. But I do know in talking with Mindy that there's certainly a lot more properties out there that we can work on. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question. One is, can you go over after other assets than the actual property lien?
No.
Oh. And can you do punitive fees? And
we haven't tried that. I think typically the judges, they tend to try to limit the recovery. I think they seem to be sympathetic towards the property owners, which is hard for me to understand. But they are the owners, and they have property rights just like the neighbors do. I think they look at it like it's kind of our profession to get them to that point of cleanup. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm happy to get the entry warrant, because if we can do something that's better than just what we've done historically, which has been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and it's frustrating for me. We've had code enforcement officers retire out of frustration, quite frankly, and they've come back and met with me, and they said, I wish we would have had this ability. You know, people who worked here literally 15 to 20 years never had the opportunity to do what we're doing now. And based on the numbers I showed you on the zoning complaints, I think it's only going to get worse as some of these historic neighborhoods kind of fall into disrepair. You know, people aren't reinvesting in their neighborhoods. We are going to try to work with some of the community groups to identify neighborhoods that maybe need it more, so that not all the funds are coming out of our pocket, that maybe it's something that they can generate through their membership. We haven't gotten a lot of traction on that, but I think there's an opportunity there.
Thanks.
Before you leave the slide, the land that's got that, I presume it's got a $110,000 lien on it.
That's correct.
How can somebody move forward with doing something else on that particular piece of property?
They can pay off the lien.
But if the property is worth $110,000 to anybody, it just sits there and is sterilized and grows weeds?
I think eventually, if it hasn't already, and I seem to remember that it had, I suspect this will be a bank-owned property. And perhaps we can settle the cost with the bank to try to put it in production. But that is a problem. I mean, it sterilizes the property. And, you know, again, we can't stop a property owner from doing exactly what happened here. We're always in kind of recovery mode instead of, you know, we can't be proactive. We can't build a wall around his property and say you can't bring it on. I don't know what will happen.
Okay. I was just curious.
Those discussions have not happened yet. But I do think that it's probably a property that where you could see a single family home. It's a weird intersection right on the corner there, but
it's not good.
It's a tough situation.
To have dead property either. So.
Right. Yeah.
That's all. Thanks.
And just so you know, in that particular area of the county, there are a lot of vacant lots, and part of the problem in that area is because with the standards now for water and wastewater, they're too small to do a septic system on. And the city of Colorado Springs, up to this point, has not shown interest in annexation, which would obviously include provision of water and sewer. So in order to put these properties into production, they have to do an engineered system for wastewater. Obviously, that's a substantial increase in cost to your traditional septic system. So it's a problematic area, and it's problematic because of how it was platted and the services that were afforded it from the get-go. As you all saw, we did a number of land development code amendments. Probably the one that received the most recognition was with regard to tiny homes. That ultimately was approved by the Board of County Commissioners. We had a media event on the other side of the building with that regional building helped us host. We had two of the units, different manufacturers out there. The media was out there. Unfortunately, they asked me to speak, and Commissioner Vanderwerf, who did an excellent job. I think it was, you know, and I said it at the time, and I still mean it, is I think it's a good first step in terms of what we do with the regulations. I don't think we're experts. I don't think anybody's experts on tiny homes at this point. So we'll see how they work. We've already seen received some interest. The city emailed me asking for a copy of our regulations because they're receiving interest. Commissioner Vanderwerf has been requested to appear at several speaking engagements in other areas of the country, not just in the state. So we are getting some recognition on what we did with tiny homes. We also brought revisions regarding parking, storage, and repair of vehicles. I think those were pretty benign for the most part. I mentioned the code enforcement procedure changes. Those also required some ordinance changes in terms of the weed and rubbish ordinances. We worked with the county attorney's office to get those accomplished in coordination with the land development code amendments. One of the things we added was some of the ADA requirements showing the path from the parking area to the front door. We basically followed up with what the city did in coordination with the HBA and that. And then my favorite item, our quote-unquote cleanup, with our beekeeping and other items, ultimately were approved by the Board of County Commissioners as well. Interestingly enough, the city is now looking at amending their beekeeping regulations. So I guess we started something there. I mentioned some of the operational changes or upgrades. We were able to finalize and ultimately implement or activate the first phase of EDARP. It seems like we've been talking about that for a while, but it actually didn't occur until March of 2017. That allowed us to process the early assistance meeting, which is our pre-app meeting with developers, those applications electronically, and then the applications that come out of that, the type C's and D's, subdivisions, commercial site development plans, those kind of things, are all now coming in electronically. Huge savings in printing costs, huge savings in document management on our end. We did have one staff member who was basically assigned to taking that stuff in, tearing it apart, laying it out for all the agencies, and then putting it in the mail, sending it out. That effort is no longer, and the mailing cost is no longer. So a huge improvement in how we do business. With that, obviously, also included full transparency. Whereas before, we had everything in hard copy in a file in one of the planner's offices or on the racks back in our storage area. If you wanted to see something, if you're a member of the public, your adjacent neighbor, your competing developer, you had to request that file, come in, sit down, put the little sticky tabs and all the things you wanted to get a copy of, pay for the copies. That doesn't happen anymore. You can view all of our activity dating all the way back to 1947 electronically online. You can print it out. You can save those files to your desktop. I think my favorite intended outcome is we spend countless hours talking with appraisers and realtors about properties. We can now send them directly to EDARP, and they can do the research for themselves. They a lot of times expected us to do all of their work for them, and certainly we will still weigh in on what certain things mean, certain approvals and applications, but they wanted us to assemble all the documents for them. Now we can just send them the link and they can do that research themselves. Also in 2017, we kicked off the County Water Master Plan. Ms. Lucia Treese is on our steering committee. She's doing a fine job. I'm happy to report, so we don't need to replace that position just yet. We have a 12-member steering committee that was confirmed on the board in October. We are in the process of assembling data. I am going to report next time on the public survey that we are going to be releasing, I think, next week. Next time I visit with you all, I will put that up. And I do employ all of you that when that website is up and running, because it's electronic survey, to reach out to the people you know, reach out to your network, and encourage them to fill that out. There are some terms that are technical in nature, and I understand that sometimes that's difficult, but we didn't want to mislead people by wording it a different way. So some of it might be a little bit challenging, but I think certainly all of you have the ability to fill out the survey. We're hoping for a good response. Like most public surveys, I will probably be sorely disappointed. That's okay, but we do hope to release that next week. And again, we're hoping for ultimately Planning Commission adoption of the Water Master Plan sometime towards the end of the year in the fourth quarter. And it's important to note that you all have the authority to adopt that plan. It's not the Board of County Commissioners. Board of County Commissioners certainly are going to see it prior to your action, but because it's part of the master plan, that authority under state statute lies with this body, not with the Board of County Commissioners. We are still hoping to expand EDARP, again, to cover our type A's and B's, which are our front counter applications. Believe it or not, those are more complicated than the major development applications, because each one kind of has its own thing, and they're initiated by the applicant versus us sending them the list of things that are required. We're trying to standardize that, but they're initiated by the applicants, which actually creates some complications. Another aspect of EDARP is we're going to try to work on a co-inspection module with our Department of Public Works. I talked about how many inspections we do every year. You can probably double that for Public Works, because they are also looking at the same improvements that we're looking at prior to final acceptance, because it's that group that's going to take those improvements on for ongoing maintenance. So they want to make sure that we're covering all of our bases as well, and that they can report to their group that, yes, these improvements are, in fact, ready to be accepted. So we're going to try to streamline that process a little bit in coordination with Public Works. And then lastly, we're also going to create a code enforcement module where they can have their electronic devices out in the field, take pictures of the subject properties, include a GPS component of that so they can show exactly where they took the pictures from, date and time stamp those photos, issue notice of violations from their devices rather than having to bring everything back into the office. My whole goal is to stop doing the same thing two or three different times. It makes us much more efficient, and we're able to do more things with less people. We are going to continue to evaluate the Land Development Code. There's already, I think, three or four other items that we've identified that will ultimately be coming before you and the Board of County Commissioners, and helping Department of Public Works continue to update the engineering criteria manual.
A question back on the County Water Master Plan. El Paso County has unincorporated El Paso County, and then there's all the incorporated municipalities in there. How do they fit in to the El Paso County Water Plan?
They are all let me back up. There's representation from some of them on the steering committee, Fountain in particular, and Colorado Springs Utilities. I fully anticipate that those municipalities will participate. All municipalities will participate. I think we only had two, that those being Calhoun and Rama, that had not completed the water data survey that we sent out to the water providers. They are going to, they have already contacted us, notifying us that they are going to fill those out. There was some concern that we didn't include a representative from every municipality. I kind of, you know, I guess I dispose of that question with, if I do that, then I probably have to include a representative from every district. And now we're up to about 200 people on our steering committee. Nothing moves forward when you have 200 people providing input. So we try to get a good representation, not only of districts and municipalities, but also we have a member from the ag community. We have a member from Upper Black Squirrel Groundwater Management District, school district, one of the school districts, Falcon 49. Obviously, they have a huge stake in what happens in terms of water. They're making very sizable investments in the community. Every time they construct a school, they'd like to know that if they're going to build a school, that there's going to be water to provide to that school. So that's kind of the makeup of the steering committee. I'm really excited about the group that we have because it's a very diverse group. I should also say there's representatives from the development community in there too, two representatives from the HBA. So I think we're coming at it from all different angles. Very excited about what the outcome is. I've been pushing this as something that we should complete this year. I still anticipate that being the case. Obviously, obstacles do come up, and if it falls into next year, then so be it. But I think I've said before, after this effort, my goal is to update the county's land use master plan. I would, at that, when we get ready to kick that off, obviously also solicit a member from the Planning Commission for that effort. That my plan is that'll probably be about a three-year process. The City of Colorado Springs is in the process of updating theirs right now. They've updated already once since most of our plans were updated. So that tells you how out of date all of our small area plans are. We have some that are nearing 30 years old. A lot has happened in 30 years. I went through elementary school, high school, college, law school, and my master's during those 30 years. So the one I'm thinking of is Black Forest. There's been a fire. There's been extensive development. There's been the Cherokee Pipeline. So there has been a change in the circumstances, not only in that one, but in all the smaller area areas. The original plan was to have small area plans for every area of the county. That plan never came to fruition. There are areas of the county that don't have a small area plan associated with them. And so you all and the Board of County Commissioners are left with reviewing something pursuant to the kind of overarching policy plan, which is very general, in some cases very vague. It doesn't really drill down to the neighborhood scale, use-to-use relationships. So it's something we want to kick off this year. But again, I think that'll be about a three-year process.
With Black Forest alone.
any questions for me on any of this? Was this helpful?
Yes.
Is there anything that you would like to see that I didn't include? Did I include too much? It was about an hour.
I think it was a perfect balance.
Absolutely.
And I appreciated especially the photographs. I think all of the information not only is beneficial to us, but as someone who's the director of a metro district, I'm also going to bring this back to my metro district board. And so there's application for it outside of this room.
Good. And that's part of the reason why I printed it out. I don't expect you to retain everything I gave you today, but you know, if you find time, go back through and look at those numbers. I say it a lot, and I think maybe this presentation begins to kind of convey the message a little bit more. We do more with less staff than any other group I can think of. We have 27 employees, counting me, in this department, and we doing what we do. It's a very, very small number of people doing a lot of different things, and we have to interact. Outside of finance and IT, I think we interact with more internal departments and certainly more external agencies than any other department in the county. And that just doesn't happen. You have to have people that are committed to those interactions and building those relationships. So I'm very proud of the group that we have, obviously. I think we're moving in a good direction from a staffing standpoint. But I feel like we're always kind of behind because I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what development's going to be like next year or the year after. So I'm inherently kind of reactionary in terms of staffing, but I think we're working on that.
Craig, I commend you for your leadership ability, and please pass my personal thanks to the staff for their dedication and hard work. County employees overall just amaze me with how much they do. This lady, you would be SOL without her.
Don't say that. Now she's going to come ask for a raise.
she
got it.
But seriously, I just, having been on these boards for many years and interacting with various county staff, I am amazed at the level of dedication to their jobs, where they certainly could go into the private sector. But I think in the basis for all county employees is that they have a servant heart and they want to serve the people of this county, and I thank you.
I appreciate that, Joan. You know, and I think in that same vein, I've had employees state to me, you know, I can make more money going somewhere else, be it another jurisdiction or private sector. But I love working for the county. And for me, as the director, that's the most important thing to me. If they love being here and love what they do and love the people that they work with and the members of the public that they interact with, I feel like we're doing something right, and those are certainly the people that we want to try to keep around. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, you get
you will
double.
Get a second sandwich at your next meeting.
Thank you, Craig. This was very good. It really was.
Thank you. And again, I will be doing it for the Board of County Commissioners. I think even the Board of Adjustment asked for it. If you want to use it somewhere else, I would email it out, but it's way too big to email. I tried printing color photos, and I was running two printers at once, and they don't move nearly as fast as the black and white ones do, so I wasn't able to get it done. But thank you for your time and patience.
Thank you.
We have a, when we get to that, our next meeting, we do have three items on February 20th, so we will have a hearing that day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.